Hello and welcome to the Mr. Brown podcast, where I reflect on my journey as an early career teacher, with a special focus on mental health. I am your host, James Brown. Salutations. I've double and triple checked my microphone this week, so we shouldn't have any audio issues. Now, I'd like to start this episode with a question, which I think is a great question. A couple of weeks ago, it was transition morning in my school. So I spent period one with my new tutor group, and it was lovely to get to meet them all. I knew some of them already from teaching them maths, but lots I didn't know, so it was nice to spend time with them. And one of the things we did during transition morning was to introduce the new behaviour curriculum. So my school has decided to increase its focus on what we're calling the moral virtues. So we already had a character education framework, which focused primarily on performance and intellectual virtues. Things like being proactive and responsible and inquisitive and determined and engaged. Those were our five virtues. But the only virtue within those that seems to have something to do with moral behaviours is the responsible one. But we decided that it needed to be broken down a little bit more and to be more explicit. So we've broken the responsible virtue down into six components. And those components are honesty, courage, considerateness, kindness, gratefulness, and finally, respect. And as I was introducing these new moral virtues, a boy at the front puts his hand up. And he asks, "But sir, how can we respect teachers when they're shouting at us?" And I must admit, I didn't know how to respond. Now, I'd imagine this question is especially pertinent for this student, because he is a student who sometimes finds himself in trouble, so he might be getting shouted at more frequently than other students. But it was a very sincere question on his part, and I don't think it came from a place of arrogance. I think it came from a place of wanting to have respect for teachers, not wanting to get in trouble so often, but he sometimes found that the way teachers interacted with him made it more difficult for him to have that respect and to avoid that trouble. Now, that's not to completely absolve him of blame. He gets himself into the trouble in the first place, but it is still a fantastic question. So to repeat, how can we respect teachers when they're shouting at us? Now, my first response was to say, well, it was to try to diffuse the question, really. So I said, well, you know, sometimes teachers need to shout just to be heard over the noise of the classroom. And they're not shouting at anyone in particular, they're just shouting to be heard. And once the volume levels have come back down, they'll stop shouting. And he said, no, sir, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when a teacher is shouting at you. So we're discussing a one-to-one interaction where a teacher is shouting at a student, and not in a situation where they're just shouting to be heard. So it's a far more personal form of shouting. And so I thought, what he's really driving at here, oh, and I should mention that every student in the class by this point was really paying attention. They were very interested in this question and exploring this issue. So what I thought he was really driving at was to shout at someone in that personal way is disrespectful. So if someone's doing that to you, how can you respect them How can you respect someone who disrespects you? That was definitely the underlying assumption. And so in my head, I'm thinking, well, can I challenge that assumption at all? Are there any situations in which someone might be shouting at someone else in that personal one-to-one way, but in a way which isn't disrespectful? And I couldn't think of any such situation. I think that if you're shouting at someone in a personal one-to-one way, and you're not doing it just to be heard over some background noise, I think that is disrespectful. And so I was unsure, again, where to go with this. He wanted an answer, and so did the rest of the class by this point, and I was unsure what to say. I did say that I thought that teachers shouldn't shout in that way. And I even suggested that if, as a student, they find themselves on the receiving end of this sort of disrespectful shouting, it was their responsibility to be the grown-up in the interaction, to turn the other cheek, to de-escalate, and to try to speak to the teacher once they'd calmed down. But he wasn't too happy with that answer. He didn't want to have to be the bigger person in the argument. And I don't blame him. That's an awful lot, really, to ask of 11, 12, 13-year-olds to take the higher road if a teacher is behaving towards them in a disrespectful way. So the question still stands. How can we respect a teacher when they're shouting at us? I spoke to a colleague later in the day, and he suggested drawing a distinction between having respect and showing respect. So his idea was that if a teacher is shouting at a student, then the student in their heart might really disrespect this teacher. But it's important for the student to nonetheless behave in a way that's respectful, to show the teacher respect, even if they don't respect them. Now, I have a problem with this because I think it essentially encourages two-facedness. It encourages the student to be two-faced, to think and feel one way and to behave and act in a different way. And I think that's problematic. I think that undermines integrity and sincerity. So I'm not really happy with that answer. And I've thrown it out to Twitter this morning, and it might be one of my most popular ever tweets. There's been a lot of discussion and suggestions. The general opinion seems to be that teachers shouldn't shout. Not in this one-to-one personal, arguably disrespectful way. It's fine to shout to be heard over the ruckus of a classroom, and especially if there's a health and safety issue. If there's a fire, for example, that would be a good time to shout. Here's one interesting response. I've only shouted when safety of the children is compromised. Other than that, raised voices. You've either lost control or exerting some kind of power trip. Shouting is a traumatic event for a child. The best teachers I had growing up never shouted. Here's another interesting response. Human beings are emotional. I've been shouted at by other adults and children in my career. I admit I have shouted at times. I wouldn't respect someone who constantly shouts, but I do understand people can get angry and don't automatically lose respect if I hear someone shout. Now, again, I would say that's a very mature and nuanced perspective to take on the issue, and perhaps a little bit beyond the capacity of younger children, but an interesting response nonetheless. Someone draws the distinction between shouting and raised voices. That's an interesting distinction, because there is definitely a point where a raised voice tips into being a shout, and then the dynamic does seem to change. So would raised voices be okay, but not shouting? That's another interesting question. One more response that I'll mention. suggested drawing a distinction between respecting the person and respecting their authority. So the idea here might be that it's okay for a student not to respect a teacher as a person, but they must nonetheless respect their authority as a teacher. So if the student's being shouted at by the teacher, it's important for them to nonetheless respect the teacher's authority and to, I don't know, become compliant. I don't like this suggestion either, because it undermines critical thinking. It's important to think critically about systems of authority and whether they're acting in people's best interests. And again, it is quite a sophisticated, nuanced view, which might be beyond a lot of younger children. They're unlikely to separate the person from the teacher. Okay, so what's the upshot of all this? I don't think a teacher should shout. I've shouted in the past, and I think that on those occasions I got it wrong. I can't think of an occasion where I shouted at a student in a one-to-one personal way and it made the situation any better. So teachers shouldn't shout in this way. So the question then becomes, what should they do? If they find themselves in a conflict situation with a student, how can they de-escalate things? Well, I googled this and found a good article on Twinkle. I will link it in the show notes. Here are some general de-escalation strategies in the classroom. And the article claims that these are research-based. They all certainly seem very reasonable. I don't think there are any references. Now, let me check. No, but they all seem reasonable enough. And it certainly wouldn't surprise me if they're grounded in research. So let's have a look. The first strategy, active listening. Acknowledge the opinion of the other person and their feelings towards the situation. Communicate openly to help them see that you are on their side. This will help you work together towards a solution instead of fighting against each other. Stay calm, even if you're not. This will help the student feel less threatened and more likely to communicate with you. Keep your temper and model respectful behaviour towards your student. It also helps to try and keep a friendly tone and lighten the situation with humour where appropriate. I'd just like to draw attention to something from that strategy about modelling respectful behaviour. So this was something I didn't mention already, but teachers are meant to be role models. And if it is inherently disrespectful to shout at someone on a one-to-one level, and if we don't want our students to themselves behave in disrespectful ways, then teachers as role models should not be shouting in that one-to-one disrespectful way. Just shouldn't be happening. Third strategy, offer positive choices. Instead of telling a student what to do or trying to force them to behave in a certain way, try giving them a few different options to choose from. This will prevent the student from feeling powerless or unheard and help direct them towards displaying desirable classroom behaviour. Ask questions. Perhaps the student is struggling with something you can help with or needs something in order to focus. If you ask a student what you can do to help them focus, they may surprise you with some practical solutions. Choose your battles wisely. If something doesn't need to be a big deal, don't turn it into one. Consider how important an issue is in the grand scheme of things and don't sweat the small stuff, especially if it could escalate into a much bigger problem. Regarding this strategy, I'd just like to say on an anecdotal level that I get into far more arguments with my students when, for example, I've had a bad night's sleep. I seem to lose my patience much quicker, and I'll pick fights that did not need to be picked. So I think there's a great deal of wisdom in that strategy about choosing your battles. And finally, use non-threatening body language. Try using your proximity in the classroom to correct bad behaviour without saying a single word. Using simply hand gestures, such as tapping lightly on a desk or placing a finger to your lips, can be much more effective than more aggressive approaches like raising your voice. So again, here, shouting would be characterised as aggressive, and I'd agree. And again, we don't want to be role modelling aggressive behaviours to our students. And I should also say, to any students who might be listening, and since they recently discovered my podcast, I think the bulk of my audience is now students from my school. So I should say that these six strategies that I've just outlined are not just for the teacher, but they are for students as well. So it's everyone's responsibility to de-escalate these situations. And the teacher, as the responsible adult, perhaps bears more responsibility, but that doesn't mean that the student bears none. It's important that we all practice these behaviours. Okay, before I continue with the rest of this episode, I've got two more things I want to discuss this week. But before I continue, it's my usual mid-episode Patreon plea. So this episode took around 2 to 3 hours to produce, which is about average, and I aim to produce 2 to 3 episodes a month. So in a given month, I'll probably spend anywhere between 4 and 9 hours producing podcast episodes. If you think that work is worth at least the price of a coffee, £2 to £3, then please consider becoming a patron and helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. Any contribution would be greatly appreciated. I'll leave the link to my Patreon page in the show notes as always. Right, on with the episode. In addition to teaching maths, I also teach computer science. And at the start of this year, my computer science knowledge was very shaky. But I've been teaching the same lessons on a rotation, and my knowledge over the course of the year has really improved. And I've also noticed that I think my explanations seem to have improved as well. And by improve, I mean they've gotten shorter. So just recently I taught a lesson on arrays. That's not two words. Arrays. That's one word. Arrays. Arrays. And it occurred to me after the lesson that my initial explanation had been much shorter than the first time I delivered that lesson. And consequently, my students had much more time to have a go at the task, and I think they got more out of it. The first time I delivered that lesson, I think my explanation was longer and a bit more rambly, and that was probably because I wasn't only explaining the idea to my students, I was also explaining it to myself. I was trying to figure it out for myself, and I was meandering in different directions. But now that I've got it, I seem to have boiled the explanation down to its essentials, and I can deliver them fairly efficiently, and the students can crack on. But my underlying assumption here is that a shorter explanation is a better one. And I wanted to think about this in light of something called the curse of knowledge. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. You can read about it in a great book by Steven Pinker called The Sense of Style. And in that book, he argues that the greatest reason for bad writing is that the author is suffering from the curse of knowledge. They understand what it is they want to say. But because they understand it, they've forgotten what it's like not to understand it. And then when they try to explain it to the reader, they don't do it thoroughly enough. Their explanation is too dense, hard to penetrate, and often filled with lots of jargon and other unnecessary technical terms. So he thinks that's a real problem when it comes to explaining something in writing, but it's no doubt a problem for teachers delivering their explanations in the classroom as well. So my worry is, now that I understand this topic myself, What if my explanation has gotten shorter because I'm actually suffering now with the curse of knowledge? Shorter doesn't necessarily mean better. Maybe I've forgotten what it's like to be in my student's shoes, not knowing anything about this topic. Maybe I should be giving them more. My students might be sat there thinking, that wasn't enough for me. I need to hear that again. I need it in more detail. I need more examples. I need more of that meandering that I had originally done in my first lesson on that topic. So while I think it's good, on the one hand, that explanations become less wordy and more efficient over time, it's important that you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And how can we decide whether we've done this? Well, I think it will be evident when students come to do their independent work. So on this occasion, I think it was fine. I delivered that shorter explanation, which to my ears was more efficient and much better than my original one. And then when I set the students off to do their work, they were getting it. They were fine. They could access the task. I did my usual circulation, helped a few individuals, and it was good. But the day I deliver a very short, crisp explanation and the students can't then access the task that follows, that will be the day that I realise I'm suffering from the curse of knowledge. And I would then need to flesh my explanation back out, I would say. So shorter explanations don't necessarily mean better explanations, and it's important to always keep that idea of the curse of knowledge in the back of your head. That's what I think. Finally, this week, as I said in a previous episode and mentioned earlier in this episode, the students at my school have discovered my podcast, and it's really heartwarming how interested they are. And I should have a real good think about why that is, because I can't imagine that they're that interested in the content, because the content's aimed primarily at young teachers, teachers in general. I can't imagine they find it that interesting. I think perhaps they find it interesting because it tells them something about me as a person that they didn't already know. And I think students inherently want to make personal connections with their teachers. So maybe that's it. But anyway, they're very interested, and I received a lovely email from one of my students in year 10. And I'd just like to read it to you. Hi, Mr. Brown. You didn't tell the class that you had a podcast. It is very good. I love what you say in it, and it's very motivating. I'd like to say it helped me along with my mental health and well-being. Well, to this student, and to any others who may feel similarly, it makes me very, very happy that this podcast might have helped you with your mental health and well-being. And I'll just say that it's helped me a lot with my mental health and well-being over the years as well. In fact, before this podcast, I had another podcast called My PGCE, which I recorded during my teacher training year as a way to help me process my feelings, because I was worried going into that training year that it would be too much for me to handle. I'd heard that training to become a teacher was very, very hard. And so I made that podcast to help me reflect on my feelings. It was almost like an audio journal, and journaling can be very good for mental health. So the podcast has definitely helped me, and it makes me very, very happy to hear that it might be helping others as well. And on that note, I'll say goodbye for this week. There are only 2 days of school left before the summer holidays. I think I'll do a roundup of the year at some point in the summer holidays, and then maybe a few other episodes I'll see. Bye for now. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word in person and on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at MrBrownPod or email MrBrownPod@gmail.com. Please subscribe, rate and review in your directory of choice. Please also consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/MrBrownPod and helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. Thank you, and talk again soon.